11_0, the new ether force and field. #11_0, the new ether force and field. We have a 3D ontology based on a condensed matter narrative. The fabric of space behaves like a fluid and a solid. We explain matter as defects in the fabric of space. Their energy E=mc2, translating the elastic energy contained in them. Gravity translates the density deformations of this new ether. Electromagnetism derives from the transverse fluid-like vibrations of the ether. The ontology is of a field and a force through the field coupled with defects in the field. Quantum mechanics emerges in this model by adjoining the construct of standing waves that the defects create about them. The waves sum in a wake as the defects move through their wake in the ether. Higgs first results from the field itself, and then chaotic dynamics emerge from this coupled object of the particles and their historical path-based wakes. The path forms the path.
It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy, oh boy. Hello, hello, welcome one and all. That was the intro to a song called Church of Space. A23P cosine 1_11, a Creative Commons song that I picked up somewhere along the way, and I thought it was pretty cool. Hey, DJ Zeptar, super cool to see you in comm. Want to mention to everyone, if you're listening to a non-radio, why aren't you in comm? If you can, comm is the place to go when we chat and have fun while listening to a non-radio. You don't have to join in on comm, but if you've got free hands or you can type into the comm, then yeah, jump on in. All you have to do is SSH over to sdf.org. If you are a new user, you want to use new at sdf.org. That's November Echo Whiskey, N-E-W at sdf.org. Boom. Once you do that, you will sign up for an account. And once you have a shell, you can run comm, C-O-M. You'll press G for go to. And then a non-radio, all lowercase, all one word, boom, you are now in the radio room with the cool people. You can press H for help. You can always press the equal sign for the current schedule, which, just to remind you, it's Monday, which means that at 1930 UTC is the Dubious Goals Committee, and then at 20 hours, or at 8 UTC, we've got Mix Remix. And there's a world of other shows coming on after that. Definitely check it out. Go ahead and press the equal key or go to anonradio.net. Speaking of that, let's go ahead and mention, give a big shout out to everybody in comm, including F Fog, DJ Zeptar, we talked about, GTC 1977 and Ratsu, good to see you, M Stoney back in the house, and our good friend X1, welcome, welcome. Very glad to see everyone, and pretty rad. Also, big shout outs to our good friends, common friends, including DJ Snowdesk, Jazz Maz, who's always listening wherever he is, and also to Northern Lights. Hello, hello, welcome, welcome. Hope you're all well. All right, and SMJ, of course. Can't forget SMJ. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start, and that's
world news.
That's right, with our world news, and we've got. It's action-packed. There's a lot of info today. First up, an update on that Norway attack where the guy was shooting arrows at people. Norway attack victim stabbed, not shot with arrows, say police. Attacker was armed with bow and arrows, but five people who died had in fact been stabbed, police confirm. Five people killed were all stabbed to death and not shot with arrows, as initially suspected. Four women and one man, aged between 52 and 78, were killed on Wednesday in an attack in Kongsberg, a town about 45 miles or 70 kilometers west of the capital of Oslo. The attacker was armed with a bow and arrow, which he shot at several people, wounding at least one. But on Monday, the police inspector Per Thomas Omholt told reporters none of the deaths were caused by the weapon. Five people were killed with stabbing weapons, Omholt told a news conference. He declined whether these were knives or larger weapons. Some were killed inside their own homes, others out in public. Three other people were injured, including an off-duty police officer who was shot with a bow and arrow in the early phase of the 35-minute rampage. So, you forgot M&W. I don't know. Oh. Police said they were still interviewing eyewitnesses. Everything points to the victims being selected at random. Police initially said a man armed with a bow and arrow had committed the killings. They later added that other weapons were also involved. Umholt did not say why it had taken 6 days to clarify the situation. So, this is a very interesting story, but it's a terror attack, and I just wanted to be sure and give that update, since the fantastical part of this was that he had killed people with a bow and arrow, and that's just not the case. So I want to be sure everyone's clear on the news and the history there. Speaking of history, we have a piece of history that I think is going to be useful to know. And check it out. Turkey is committed to boosting trade ties with the entirety of Africa and plans to hold a Turkey-Africa Business Council meeting soon. President Erdogan made this promise when he visited Angola as part of his three-nation tour to the continent. Turkey's trade with the African countries currently stands at about $25 billion. The Turkish president expressed hope to increase this figure. He said our trade volume with Angola in the first 8 months of this year was recorded as $132 million. We should exert mutual efforts to increase it to $500 million, as we had agreed on. he said our trade volume with Angola in the first 8 months... Oh, we talked about that. The Turkish president made this revelation at a joint press conference with Angolan president in Luanda on October 18th. The press conference was after the two presidents had attended the Turkey-Angola Business Forum meeting, where Turkish president addressed business people from the two countries. President Erdogan said a platform will be created for business people from the two countries to come together and discuss potential investments in a wide range of fields, including transportation, health, agriculture, textiles, and construction. Erdogan will be visiting Nigeria and Togo after Angola. Big shout out. So that's funny. I was laughing not at this proposed claim, but more at Tobe and Calm, because he said that's like asking Snoop if he's got weed. And that made me laugh. Let's keep it moving. We got lots of
world news.
We got lots of world news to talk about. Let's go over here to Russia and the Baltic states. Russia is going to suspend NATO diplomatic mission amid tension. Russia is suspending its diplomatic mission in NATO, according to Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. In addition, staff at NATO's office in Moscow will be stripped of their accreditation by November. Comes after NATO expelled 8 diplomats from Russia's mission earlier this month, saying that they were working as intelligence officers. Relations between NATO and Russia have been strained since Moscow annexed Ukraine in 2014. Mr. Lavrov confirmed to Russia media that the move was in response to NATO's actions, accusing the military alliance of not being interested in equitable dialogue. If NATO members have any urgent matters, they can contact our ambassador in Belgium on these questions. X1's going to be busy, Russia media quoted Mr. Lavrov as saying. Following the announcement, NATO said it had not yet received official confirmation of the move, but had taken note of Mr. Lavrov's comments. Russia's move was described by German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas as troubling. It's more than just regrettable. This decision taken in Moscow will seriously damage the relationship, he said. When NATO expelled 8 Russian diplomats this month, it halved the size of Moscow's mission working at its Brussels headquarters to 10. At the time, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the organization had seen an increase in Russian malign activity, and therefore we need to be vigilant. That's what's going on. So there's a bit of concern there, as Russia and NATO are always kind of on edge. What else is happening? Well, Belarus has expelled French ambassador amid tensions with the EU. France said on Monday its ambassador to Belarus had left the country on the previous day because authorities in Minsk had asked him to leave after he didn't present his credentials to President Alexander Lukashenko. Local media said the move to kick the ambassador out is linked to the non-recognition by France and other European countries of Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko's re-election in August. The Belarusian Foreign Ministry said the emergency departure of the French ambassador is connected with his unwillingness to present his credentials to Lukashenko. The head of the French diplomatic mission didn't express readiness to complete the procedure for assuring the office, assuming office as ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary to the Republic of Belarus, which is stipulated by international law and generally recognized practice, said Anatoly Glaz, press secretary for the Belarusian Foreign Ministry. Belarusian ambassador to France, Igor Fisenko, was recalled to Minsk for consultations, the Belarusian Foreign Ministry said. So this will be what's going on there. France's foreign ministry explained that de Lacoste did not present his credentials to Lukashenko because it was in line with the common European position of not recognizing the legitimacy of the outcome of the August 2020 presidential election. So we'll see what happens there. There are calls from the European Union for more or tougher sanctions against Lukashenko. All of the country's top opposition leaders are either in prison or have fled the country. Latvia's foreign minister, Edgars Rinkevics, called on Monday for more economic sanctions on Belarus to increase pressure on Lukashenko. My mom had a pen pal in Latvia for many, many years. It's very cool. Anyway, Latvia rules. All right. So what else is happening? Well, lots going on, you know. Lots and lots.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah.
The news over with. I want to hear the music.
This guy, come on. You know what? Let's do this. You know, let's switch it up and let's talk about two kind of science-y stories. And then we'll listen to a song and then we'll come back to it. Publius, I'm sorry you're not here today because we've got two stories that involve, or one story, I guess, that involves nuclear material and one that involves kind of nuclear material. First, China denies testing nuclear-capable hypersonic missile. China has denied reports it tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile, insisting instead that it was a routine spacecraft check. The initial report in the Financial Times newspaper prompted concern in Washington, where U.S. intelligence, I saw SDF and Facebook in one sentence, and I couldn't put the two together. Did not compute.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, anyway, this was not a missile. This was a spacecraft. A foreign ministry spokesman Zhao Lihan told a media briefing, "This is of great significance for reducing the cost of spacecraft use." Mr. Zhao added that many countries had carried out similar tests in the past. When asked if the Financial Times report was accurate, he replied yes. The report on Saturday quoted five unnamed sources who said a hypersonic missile had been launched in the summer. It flew through low-orbit space before cruising down and narrowly missing its target. The test showed that China had made astounding progress on hypersonic weapons and was far more advanced than U.S. officials realized. On Monday, U.S. Disarmament Ambassador Robert Wood said the U.S. was very concerned, adding that Washington had held back from pursuing military applications for this technology. However, he said both China and Russia had been very actively pursuing military uses, which meant the U.S. was having to respond in kind. Hello, Dirty Rig. Welcome. Yeah, so this is pretty interesting. I thought it was news to me, mostly because what we're finding out more and more is it's like the U.S. has done a really good job at keeping the citizen, at least keeping the U.S. and a lot of the West in the dark about how the rest of the world's doing. It's like, oh, the U.S. is number one. We're number one. But not really. We had a story not too long ago where the head of the national security, of the cybersecurity for the Navy was like, quit, because it's like, yeah, versus China, we're like kindergartners, we're children. It's going to take decades for us to catch up to where they are today. So that's kind of what we're seeing here. But now it's like, oh, supersonic missiles. Well, hey, we thought we had plenty of time. So anyway, I think although the U.S. is full of, is so corrupt that even though we spend more money than anyone on military stuff, I just don't think that money is going anywhere but into people's pockets. So good luck. I hope the United States doesn't crumble while I'm still alive, but you never know. All right. Well, that's fine. Let's talk about something else that could ruin the world. Let's go to Fukushima. Japan's new prime minister won't delay release of contaminated water into ocean. Japan's new prime minister, Fumio Kishida, has said there can be no delay to plans to release contaminated water from the wrecked Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant into the sea, despite opposition from fishers and neighboring countries. Kishida, who made his first trip to the plant at the weekend since becoming prime minister last month, said every effort would be made to reassure local people that disposing of the water into the Pacific Ocean was safe. The wastewater, which is pumped up from the reactor's basements and treated to remove all but one radioactive material, has built up at the site since the plant suffered a triple meltdown in March of 2011. I felt strongly that the water issue is a crucial one that should not be pushed back, Kishida told reporters after being shown around the plant, by the plant's operator, Tokyo Electric Power. More than 1 million tons of water are being stored in 1,000 tanks at the site, and TEPCO is warned that space will run out later next year. The government and TEPCO said in April that work to release the heavily diluted water would begin in the spring of 2023 and take decades to complete. The move is opposed by nearby fishing communities, which say it will undo years of hard work built rebuilding their industry's reputation since the plant was struck by a huge tsunami in 2011, soon after the northeast coast was rocked by a magnitude 9 earthquake. The decision ends years of debate over what to do with the water, with other options including evaporation, or construction of more storage tanks. South Korea still bans seafood imports from the region and has repeatedly voiced concern, claiming that discharging the water represented a grave threat to the marine environment. Ah, hey, X1. When we can find out, let's see. Let's go back, make sure. Hypersonic missile. You're correct. They use the term hypersonic. In that story. So anyway, Fukushima, they're going to release that water over a period of time. Kishida, who supports the restart of nuclear reactors that were idled after the meltdown, offered flowers and prayed at a monument to the disaster in Nami, one of several communities near the plant that declared no-go zones after the disaster. Some residents have since returned to their homes after evacuation orders were lifted. Kishida said that nuclear power must be part of Japan's energy mix if it's to become carbon neutral by 2050. But he has yet to confirm if he will attend the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow early next month. Japanese media suggested he won't decide until after lower house elections are held. Boris Johnson encouraged Kishida to attend the summit during a phone call last week, adding that Britain has considered lifting import restrictions on Fukushima produce that were introduced while it was a member of the European Union, according to Kyoto News Agency. So, this will be interesting to see. It'd be neat to see how the Fukushima bathwater does and whether it really does harm the environment or not. So we'll see. It's gonna be an adventure.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Well, it is 20 after, and it is well past time for us to start a song. But it's important that we enjoy life and not forget about everything else going on. So, this song is called, well, this is kind of funny, or this was kind of a test here. But anyway, the song I picked comes from Pearl Jam, and it's called Speed of Sound, which is a play on our hypersonic story.
Moving with
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. I forgot, I had a special, specific nuclear news story here. And that's going to be all about fuel loading is complete at Shenhenul 1. We talked about when Shenhenul 2 was getting planned, but the loading of all 241 fuel assemblies into the core of Unit 1 at the Shenhenul nuclear power plant in South Korea has been completed. Korea Hydro and Nuclear Power, KHNP, announced. The unit, the first of two APR-1400 reactors at this site, is scheduled to enter commercial operation in mid-2022, following tests at various power levels to ensure that all systems operate safely as designed. Groundbreaking for the first two units at the Shenhenul, formerly Shenulchen site, took place in May 2012. First concrete for Unit 1 was poured 2 months later, with that for Unit 2 following in June 2013. The 1,350-megawatt pressurized water reactors were originally expected to enter service in April 2017 and April 2018, respectively. Following delays, fuel loading in Unit 1 had been scheduled for June 2019, but was delayed pending safety checks by the Nuclear Safety and Security Committee, and some modifications. Commercial operation of Unit 1 was then expected in July 2021 and Unit 2 in May 2022. There have been further delays. July 9th, the NSSC, which is the Safety Committee, gave its conditional approval for the startup of Shenhenul 1. KHNP began loading the first of the fuel assemblies into the core of the reactor 5 days later. They've announced on October 13th that following completion of fuel loading, it's now conducting reactor physics and systems testings under normal operating temperature and pressure conditions. In July, the company said these tests were expected to take about 8 months to complete. So, pretty exciting. I love it. So anyway, that'll be that. Rotors B, if you want to use your SDF account on a phone to make outbound calls on the POTS network, you need to have that. You need to have a DID from the company or from SDF. I think if you want to receive calls, then you don't have to put in the phone number. You just give it your extension. Because in your SIP phone, you're just logging into the SIP account. You're not actually putting the phone in there. Just as a heads up. All right. Let's keep it moving. We've only got about 3 minutes to go. So the rest of the news, sorry, it's just going to be a couple headlines. First, airstrikes in the capital of Ethiopia's Tigray have killed 3 civilians. The raids are confirmed by 2 humanitarian workers, came days after a new military offensive was launched against Tigray forces. The EU is denying nuclear talks with Iran in Brussels, contradicting what Tehran said. The EU will not hold talks in Brussels on Thursday with Iran on restarting negotiations over the nuclear deal, a spokeswoman for the bloc said, contradicting a declaration by Tehran. So this is going to be sketchy, because the world needs this nuclear Iran deal, I think. Kerala floods. At least 26 killed as rescuers step up efforts. At least 26 people have been killed in floods in southern India after heavy rains caused rivers to overflow, cutting off towns and villages. 5 children are among the dead, and there are fears the death toll could rise further as many people are missing. So that's in Kerala. Don't worry, there's more stuff going on in India. The nightmare of India's tallest rubbish mountain. The mountains of garbage dotting India's cities will soon be replaced with waste treatment plants, Prime Minister Narendra Modi promised earlier this month. Author Soumya Roy reports from the country's oldest and tallest mountain of rubbish, some 18 stories high, in the western coast city of Mumbai. Every morning, Farah Shaikh stands on top of a more than century-old rubbish mountain in Mumbai, waiting for garbage trucks to make their way up. The 19-year-old waste picker has been scavenging heaps in the Dinwar suburb for as long as she can remember. It's just wild. Holy moly. We're going to run out of time, so just thanks so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow, and enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Be back tomorrow with more news. Oh, also, RIP Colin Powell.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening.
Doug.
I'll be back tomorrow. And every week...
7, 6.